the screening part of this, a lot of times recruiters kind of get ahead of themselves and they're like, oh boy, I got a candidate to submit. Oh boy, I got a candidate to submit. But you have to pause for a second and just make sure that this candidate is going to represent yourself to your account manager that's going to submit the resume. Make sure this candidate is going to be good for everybody involved. Don't just be in a rush to fire off a submittal.
So to make money.
So to meet a metric, honestly, like I said before, to meet a metric, I got to get 10 submittals this week. So you try to fire off these submittals just to meet a metric.
Right.
When you really should be slowing down.
So today our guest is a guy named David Hicks, and here's where a lot of our guests come from. Our guests come from people that I have interactions with, that I know, trust, and do business with. So let me tell you how I met David. So I met David through Ari Hicks. You've heard me talk about Ari. She's a past guest. She does all our marketing for all our companies. So David is a recruiter. Okay, so what he does is he helps people like me find talent to fill. Okay, so I've never done this before. So doing this, I thought, man, this is kind of risky. But I've used the sucker twice, and he's done a wonderful job at helping us find people. Because here's the thing. As an owner, as a founder, it's extremely important. My time is extremely valuable. Not only are we running multiple companies, but I have a family. And so finding talent that can work for you is an exhausting process. I mean, you get people that don't show up, all these different things. This is what David does, and he does a phenomenal job at it. He takes the big bucket, and he dwindles it down to a handful of people, and then we go from there. So all that being said, it's the longest intro I've ever done on the show. David, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Local Birmingham guy, has been in recruiting for 25 years. So so I know your brother, Michael. I know Ari extremely well. Mm-hmm. Wonderful, wonderful people. But what I first want to do is let's go back to the beginning. So how you grew up, what you wanted to do when you grew up, when you were a kid, college, all that kind of stuff. Give me the little background.
Yeah, sure. So I'm born and raised in Hoover.
Okay.
Went to Alabama, got my degree in MIS, came back to Hoover, still live there to this day.
MIS.
MIS, Management Information Systems.
That's what
I saw. Okay. So I had a minor in computer science, didn't really like programming and computer science,
sure,
but I liked the business and functional side of IT. So came out of Alabama and got a job as a database programmer with a company here in town. Did not like it at all.
Okay.
So at that time, my father was actually in the role that I wound up becoming. He was the regional manager of a large staffing company, and he was trying to get me to come work for him out of college. And I was like, no, I don't want to do the whole dad-son thing
that.
I'm going to go do my IT thing. And after about a year of that database job, I knew it wasn't for me. And I was like, all right, I'll come give it a try. But if I'm no good at it, you got to let me go. I'm not going to do this daddy nepotism thing. But I was really good at it, and I really enjoyed it. And he ended up leaving about 6 months after I started. I stayed.
So he was just he was just working there. He wasn't your boss.
Yes, he was. Well, he was a couple of steps above.
A couple steps above you.
Yeah.
He helped you. I mean, in essence, helped you, which is totally fine.
Yep.
Helps you get the job.
Yep.
You end up liking it and being pretty decent at it, but then he leaves.
He leaves shortly after I got there. And I stayed. I was really good at it. I enjoyed it and stayed there for 24 years.
24 years. So
24 years.
But being at one company for 24 years and doing really well financially, there's a golden handcuff there that's really, really difficult. Tell me the process of you, because here's the thing. Most everybody that listens to this is in a job that they don't love, mm-hmm, or they're at a job that they're fine with and they want to go do their own thing.
Mm-hmm.
24 years is a long time.
It is.
Tell me how you made that, how and why you made the transition to start your own thing.
So the golden handcuffs, anybody in sales can relate to this. When most of your, at least two-thirds of your income is commission-based, and it's this roster of people that you're making commission off of,
sure,
that you've done, and to walk away from it is very difficult and go start over at another company. So it is called golden handcuffs, but it was, it was great. I was making good money. I was comfortable. Everything was good. And then in December of 23, I found out that a huge chunk of my roster, my commission, was going to be converted permanently, and I would no longer be making that money.
Okay. So let's do this.
Yep.
Before you keep going, I want to explain this staffing industry. So you have two ways,
mm-hmm,
where in staffing that you as the recruiter makes money.
Correct.
Okay. So explain the two different ways.
So you have your contract side of the business, which are your hourly employees that you recruit to go work at XYZ company. They're billing hourly, and we're paying them hourly, and as long as they're on contract, you earn commission on that person.
Okay, so use the example, the $50 example.
Yeah, so if we're paying somebody $50 an hour, we're probably billing the client $75 an hour. It's pretty normal.
Yeah.
So the company makes that $25 an hour margin. We make as recruiters and salespeople, you make commission as long as that person's on contract on that $25.
So that person is on contract for 6 months.
Or longer.
Oh, yeah, just use 6 months. Yeah. 6 months. And then what they do is every month you make a commission off of what they're paying Johnny.
Correct.
$100, $1,000, $20 million, whatever.
Yep.
That you get that number every month part of your commission.
For the whole roster.
So that's called a contract recruiting.
Yes.
Okay, what's the other side?
The other side is the direct hire permanent placement, where, kind of like I did for you, where you find somebody and the company hires them on permanent salary, benefits, all that from day one, and they pay a percentage of the base salary to me as a fee, but they're not on my W-2. They're not my employee. They go directly to work for the client. One-time fee, I go away.
So let me give you guys an example of what we did with David. And I don't care about sharing the numbers. I'm fine with it. I want to say I was looking forward to make between $70,000 and $80,000 a year. A lot of responsibility. I then had to pay David, I want to say $15,000.
I think that's right, yeah.
To have that employee.
Correct.
I write you a check for $15,000 one time.
Yep.
So let me say this. I'm going to look into the camera when I say this. This was a little scary because my fear was, what if XYZ leaves in 6 months? But let me say this. It was worth every dime, and I've done it again because I had to hire another person. And it was so scary, bro. Like, I'm telling you, writing you a $15,000 check was so hard. But from my experience, the amount of time that you saved me was astronomical because, number one, I don't know where to look for that position.
Yep.
Name it. Yep. I'm not in hiring.
Right.
I'm in running my business. Yep. And so I would not have known where to find an executive chef, a salesperson, a back office person, an accountant. And you could just go down the list.
Yep.
Me paying you that money, I was like, dude, I was hard the first time, but after that, I was like, this is worth it.
Well, and that's the thing. When somebody finally realizes or figures out a way to quantify your time, like how much is Thomas's time worth?
Yeah.
I mean, like per hour. If you can figure out a way to quantify that, $15,000 is nothing. Because you would have spent days, weeks, you know, of your time that you need to be focused on other things.
Sure.
And so what is that worth? And it's a tough thing to quantify, but if you have a source, if you have some way of doing it on your own, then of course that's going to be the best way to do it. But if you don't...
Most people don't, David.
Most people don't.
They don't.
That's correct.
Okay, so when you left corporate America to launch Recruit, what's one thing you said, I'm never going to do this?
I would say probably worry. So the large staffing company model is driven by metrics.
Okay.
You know, how many interviews can you get a week? How many submittals did you get that week? How many placements did you make that week? Let's meet and talk about it. And it's a constant grind. And I think any recruiter or salesperson would tell you that. It's a little bit of a grind. Some people dig that. Some people, you know, it's kind of annoying. But, you know, you're constantly worrying, constantly chasing the next number. And it's nice to be away from that.
Away from it.
Yeah.
Like, from a high level, what's your process of what you're looking for when you're looking for somebody?
There's three main steps, and these are on my website, but the first step is the research, the first R in my name. But research includes sourcing. It includes knowing your client, knowing the manager. You have to ask questions. You got to meet the person and really dig into...
Meaning I'm the client.
Meaning dig into what Thomas likes. What does Thomas need in an executive chef or a salesperson? Exactly. Like, what do you need? How many years? Is there any specific techniques that the chef needs? Is there any, you know, whatever. There's all these questions that are going to save me time in the long run.
Yeah.
If I get to know Thomas and Table and Time and Meal Fit and all that, it's going to save me time. So that research is step one.
Okay.
And then also researching your candidate and really figuring out who is the ideal target candidate. So that first step is research, or sourcing, as you call it. The next step is the recruiting. So you have to have tools. These tools that a lot of recruiters and staffing companies have, they cost a ridiculous amount of money to have. And this is another reason why the fees are what they are.
You have specific tools that help you, whether it be softwares, whether it be whatever's that help you find XYZ chef, or XYZ sales, or XYZ account.
Yes, and there are tools, I don't want to get specific, but there are tools that everybody sees public versions of and has access to if they want to go to the website. But recruiters and staffing companies need enhanced versions of those tools, and that's where the expense comes in.
So I pay $100 a month for this tool. You pay $1,000 a month, or whatever.
There's one that I pay $1,500 a month for.
Wow.
A month.
But it's just like just it's access. Just like having an HVAC guy having a truck.
Exactly.
Truck's 50 grand.
That's right.
He got to have the truck to make 500 grand.
That's correct.
So you got to pay the 1500 to make, you know, however much you make.
It's all about the licenses and the softwares, but the experience is going to trump all that because we all have access to these tools. Every recruiter, every staffing company has access to the same tools if they want to pay for them, but there's the recruiting we're going to talk about is the differentiator.
Yeah.
But so recruiting. So, yep. So once you identify your source, yep. your target candidate pool, the message that you send to them is very important. It can't be too long. They're going to look at it on their phone. It's got to be something they can digest. It's got to be something that gets their attention. You can't mention the client name or they'll just turn around and go apply at the client. So there's the recruiting message that you send and then ultimately getting on the phone. That's the second part. That's a very, very important part is getting the candidate to respond so that you can have a conversation. Okay. And then the third part is once you've submitted them, the representation part, the third R, is representing the candidate so that they have a good experience throughout the process. You keep them updated. You keep the communication flowing, representing your client and making your client, the place that they want to work and selling the client really well.
Right.
But not, you don't want to, exaggerate anything or falsify anything on either side of it, but you need to represent your candidate and your client as well as you can. And keep both updated and keep the communication flowing.
Right.
If a candidate has a bad experience with a recruiter, they are more likely to, in their mind, relate that bad experience to the client than they are to me. And a lot of times, depending on how the process flows with a client, the speed, the communication and everything, sometimes it's warranted and sometimes it's not.
Sure.
But as long as you're keeping everybody's usually adults. They just want to know where they stand. Did I get passed on? Okay, cool. Thank you for telling me.
Right.
Or no, you're moving forward in the process. Here's the interview options. Let me know what works. Okay, you got past that interview. We're probably getting an offer. Keep the communication flowing. They passed on you. Here's a little feedback. Why? Great. Thanks, David. Call me next time you have something. Make it a good experience for both
sides. For them,
because
you're going to come back to that guy.
There's probably going to be something else that I'm going to call them about. And of course, I'm hoping the client calls me again.
It's a hard question.
Yeah.
It's not in our notes, so you don't know this question's coming up, but I just thought of it, okay? How do you keep from me telling you I didn't hire them and then hiring them behind your back and not paying you?
It's in the agreement,
Sure.
But, I always say if we're having to pull the agreement out and have a conversation, something's wrong. This isn't going to last much longer anyway.
Sure.
So it's kind of one thing I like about this my company and what I'm doing is there's not a whole lot of risk other than losing a client. Like if you were to do that, it's not the end of the world. Obviously I can't work with you again,
right?
But it's not like some huge financial loss or something that I'm taking.
Part of the way you're going to really thrive in your business is A, me coming back to you.
Correct.
And B, sending my friends to you.
Correct.
And if I'm unethical, you don't want to work with me anyway.
Correct. Yes. That's what I'm saying. Like it's real easy to just say, okay, we're done with that client. Not going to do that anymore. And I'm not, it's no skin off their back, it's no skin off my back. So I can cut it off. They can cut it off whenever they want to.
Yeah.
If they don't have a good experience with me, it's not like they're going to tear the agreement apart. They're just never going to call me again.
Sure.
And that's the same thing in a sense.
Yeah. So you've been doing this 25 years. What is like the biggest mistake you see that recruiters make in this business?
Not screening the candidates properly because a bad submittal, and I've made some obviously, but the screening part of this, a lot of times recruiters kind of get ahead of themselves and they're like, oh boy, I got a candidate to submit. Oh boy, I got a candidate to submit. But you have to pause for a second and just make sure that this candidate is going to represent yourself to your account manager that's going to submit the resume. Make sure this candidate is going to be good for everybody involved. Don't just be in a rush to fire off a submittal.
To make money.
So to meet a metric, honestly, like I said before, to meet a metric, I got to get 10 submittals this week. So you try to fire off these submittals just to meet a metric.
Right.
When you really should be slowing down and saying, hold on.
How are you doing things different in your company than you were in a corporate company?
I do all of the recruiting for my company.
Okay.
So like kind of going back to that last example, I have salespeople that work for me that are bringing me leads and all that, but I do all of the recruiting for my company. And that's important because, in the large staffing company model, there's a tendency for the recruiting team to be the training ground. A lot of times it's just kind of the entry point into the company. As soon as you get good, you know the business, they move you into sales, right? So there's kind of a constant juniorness.
The bottom feeder dudes.
Well, junior to mid. And there are every staffing company has senior recruiters, don't get me wrong, but they're working on the most profitable, the highest profile stuff all time. And the junior to mid, the new recruiters are working on the high volume, probably lower margin kind of stuff, but it's this constant state of junior to mid flux in the recruiting team. And really that's the service. That's the most important part of what a staffing right. company does, is the recruiting.
Just finding good people for me to hire.
Yes. The salesperson, the slick talking salesperson that comes around and meets you and takes you to lunch and all that, that's great. But at the end of the day,
passes me off to you.
Correct. I've got, if the slick talking salesperson is going to go back to the recruiting team and say, all right, here's what we're looking for. And then he's got to, he or she's got to explain it very well. But then at the end of the day, they're still,
you still
most times
get in front of me.
Yeah. So it's the recruiting is the part. And if the staffing company with the best recruiters, they win. In the long run.
So there's in the corporate world, and look, I'm not ripping on corporate America because it's made a lot of people a lot of money, and there are a lot of great companies out there.
Yeah, sure,
I'm just using this as an example because this is the owner's table, and we are owners of our own business.
Yes.
Okay. In this, I'm trying to understand this because I don't really understand recruiting. So in XYZ staffing agency, you have salespeople. Salespeople come to someone like me, and they say, Thomas, let us hire your next five people.
Correct.
And then I outsource all my hiring to your company. And then that gets passed to David. David is my, quote, rep. Mm-hmm. And then David does all the work. David finds the chef, the accounting, the social media guy, all that.
Correct.
But so the salesperson is not finding me. You're the recruiter.
Yes.
So there's a sales guy, and then there's a recruiter.
Correct.
Okay.
Account manager or salesperson.
So in corporate staffing, the recruiter, good recruiters get moved up to sales.
Correct. Well, and not corporate staffing, but large staffing company
model.
Staffing,
that's what I meant.
Corporate, yeah, there's a whole corporate right. recruiting stuff that's separate, but internal to the company. But large staffing, that's the only way you can do it, because you can't steal recruiters from other staffing companies. There's non-competes. There's paperwork in place. So you have to train them. So I get why the method's in place, and it's worked very well for a lot of large staffing companies. But that's the byproduct of it. That's the bad part of it, in my opinion, is that it leaves the recruiting team in a constant state of junior to midness for most accounts.
For most accounts.
Yep.
Okay, so I'm a CEO, I'm an owner. Before I ever post a job, what's the one question I should ask myself before posting that job?
Is there anybody internal that can fill this role? In most cases, the answer should be yes.
Really?
Yes, especially for management level roles or senior level roles. So you have to imagine, if you were to bring in a manager and there's somebody that's been on that team and is a senior resource on that team, been in that role for 5 years, and you bring in an external manager to be above that person, there are situations where that is absolutely 100% required. But the question was, what's the first question you should ask yourself? Is there anybody internal that is ready for that role? Because if you bring that manager in, that senior person sees it and goes, well, why didn't I get
They're
that
gonna
job?
Have to train in some ways that person that's above them.
Well, they're going to, exactly. And like, why didn't I get the role? Why didn't the senior?
I'm training this guy.
I'm training the manager. Like, so you got that dynamic is there. And I know the tendency is to want to bring somebody in that has all this management experience, has done all this before, but you have to ask yourself, is that person, that senior person, are they ready to move up?
So if
first
it,
question.
If it takes me 60 days to hire someone, what's that really cost to me?
So every position at a company, every single one of them has an impact, a value to the bottom line of a company.
Correct.
Every single one of them. It is another thing that is very hard to quantify. What, you know, not having this position filled is costing us what? Time, the project gets delayed, the whatever. I mean, everything has a monetary value, but it's hard to put an exact number on it. But I mean, if the position's open, it needs to be filled. And there's something that's being impacted negatively because it's not. So how do you quantify that?
It's so hard, but like I talk about this all the time with our people, and like giving them time off and not taking certain jobs and things like that. Mm-hmm. But like morale.
Yep, that's one of the big impacts.
Like, so you can't, but you can't measure that.
Okay.
You can.
Yep.
But you can't measure your staff's, you know, thought of you as a boss or you as an owner of like, oh, they're just putting more work. Like,
yep.
You need to give them time. People love time off.
Yes, they do.
People love time off.
Yep.
People love pay increases. Mm-hmm. People love all that stuff. And if Susie quits and it's going to be more work on Diana and Kristen, mm-hmm. that weighs on them.
And that's a normal part of anybody expects, okay, well, Suzanne left. We got to pick up the slack until they fill that position. But the longer that position goes unfilled and the more stress is put on the remaining team, it's not good.
Yeah.
You need to get that spot filled and take the pressure off the remaining team as quickly as possible.
As quickly as you can.
If that drags out 6 months or a year, not good.
Getting the hire wrong is always a fear.
Yep.
What's the hidden cost of getting a hire wrong?
So it's, I mean, they happen. I mean, every manager's made a bad hire. I mean, it's just unfortunate, but you try to minimize them. But it's again, it goes back to the strain you're putting on everybody else. If you make a bad hire, you spend 3 or 6 months or whatever training the person and, you know, and doing all that with your team, and then all of a sudden it's just like, this isn't going to work out. We got to let this person go. You are literally 6 months behind, and now you got to start all over and train another 6 months. So a bad hire puts you behind whatever the project is, whatever they were hired to do, is behind now probably a year.
Oh my gosh.
A year. Yeah. So it hurts.
You hear all this hiring advice out there, mm-hmm. from people that be Instagram or LinkedIn or whatever. What's the one piece of hiring advice that you've heard a long time that you think is wrong?
The need to look for 100% match of candidates. Like, just sometimes.
Being like, here are my 26 points. Mm-hmm. They got to hit all 26.
That is going to be expensive. It's going to take time and all that. Sometimes a 75% match is good enough. They're going to look at the other 25% as an opportunity to grow and learn. They're not going to cost as much. They're going to be at the bottom or the middle of your range. So just not looking for A to Z. Sometimes it's okay to pick three required skills and make everything else a nice to have.
You think when you find that person that's in the 80% range, they will probably work harder because they got a little more to learn, and they're more motivated.
And then you can look for the personality and the energy and all that kind of stuff, the person that you're going to enjoy working with and training, right, and mentoring and all that. You can look for those things instead of J through Z.
Okay, so I've heard this all the time.
Yep.
Okay. Mm-hmm. The person that I'm looking for is not applying for the job I have.
Correct.
What's the biggest reason the best talent will never apply for my job posting?
Back when the internet started and, Career Builder and Monster and all these big companies, they were the place to be, right?
Right.
Everybody was out there checking it out and throwing resumes out there. Nowadays, the best employees, they're not looking for jobs.
They're not.
They've been at their company for 2, 5, 10 years. They're doing great work. They're being taken care of. They're being paid well. They're not looking. They're happy. But if you dangle the right opportunity, the right message that I mentioned before, if you dangle that right message in front of somebody with the right money and the right sort of message, then they'll reply and say, yeah, I'll talk about that.
But here's my thing. If Johnny's not looking for a job, mm-hmm. how do you find Johnny?
So that's where the tools come in. So
I got you.
All the websites and all the licenses and all the things that you have to find these candidates. If they don't have a digital presence somewhere, it's very difficult to find anybody, unless you just want to get up and go down to the restaurant down the street and go back there and talk to the chef back there.
Can I see the head chef?
Yeah. can I talk to the head chef? I mean, unless you're willing to do that stuff, which, right, you can do. I'm not bagging that, but they've got to have a digital presence somewhere.
So you recruit over multiple industries.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What's a hiring tactic from one industry that you successfully applied to completely different ones?
There's a lot of different ways to search for candidates. I mean, you can search for skills, you can search for job titles, you can search, you can look in a number of different ways, but there's not really a specific way to do it. Over 25 years, you learn what works and what doesn't work. It's really more about the message you're sending, the candidates that you're targeting. Are they the right candidate? And then from there, seeing, networking with that person and getting referrals and doing things, all of that applies to every industry. It doesn't matter whether it's IT, whether it's healthcare, whether it's software, whatever it is, it all works.
People are people.
People are people. Everybody's looking for everybody's interested in growing their careers and all that. It's all about, can you find them and can you put the right message in front of them? That's it.
So you've hired everything from chefs to IT to, accountants to all these different things. Everything. What's the one industry that you have the most confidence in hiring in?
So that's going to be IT, since I got my degree in IT back at Bama, and I came into my first company as an IT recruiter. I did that exclusively for probably the first 15 years. And then after that, it expanded into everything. Engineering, IT, finance, sales, marketing. I even had a team of lawyers that worked for me at one point.
So you say IT. Give me an example of like IT jobs that you hire all the time.
So that's software developers, network engineers, QA, quality assurance resources. I just got a job a minute ago for quality engineer. So IT.
What's a quality engineer?
When you hear quality engineer, that's probably referring to something in the manufacturing sort of world, as opposed to a software QA person. Software is software quality assurance. Quality engineering tends to go more towards manufacturing and industrial quality type stuff.
Got it.
So, any type of IT position I can, and that's a big part of this that goes back to the junior recruiter thing. I know how to ask questions to software developers and network engineers and everybody to find out if they know what they're talking about. Whereas a junior recruiter is probably going to be reading off a script and trying to kind of make some judgments. I can tell instantly if somebody's.
Is there something when you talk to somebody that they say or do that puts up a positive, what I would call green flag for that person? You're talking to the candidate, not me. You're talking to the candidate. You talk to them and they say something like this, or they have this thought or this feel. Is there anything that they do or say that's a green flag for you?
How they communicate, are they long-winded? Are they giving me yes, no answers? Mm. Like, how do they wrap back and forth with me is a good indicator. If they let me finish my question, let me talk for a second, and then they give me some, you know, some good answers with a little backup, a little context, and then they stop, that's good. If somebody, you know, sometimes I get on the phone with somebody and they don't stop talking for 10 minutes, 15 minutes, and I haven't even said anything. And that's a red flag. Or yeah. If I ask somebody a question and they're like, yep, I've got that, or yep, did that. I have to dig. Now it's like, okay, well, tell me about it. What did you do? You know, how did you use it? You know, what software did you use to do that? What database were y'all using over there? You got to, if I have to dig things out of you, that's not good either.
Sure.
So it's just how they communicate.
How can a leader, an owner, keep their best people when other people are coming after them?
Everybody is coming after your people every day. I mean,
get ready.
They're coming. Every day your employees are getting contacted by recruiters. You know,
we would tell our kids in college, when I was coaching college football, yeah. We would tell our kids, Hey, David, I'm leaving in May, and I'm going to go recruiting. My job is to go recruit a better player than you.
Yeah.
And I would tell them that.
Yeah.
Somebody, now, whether it motivated them or didn't, that's what we would all tell them.
Yeah.
So, but understand that the good talent, people are going to come after the good talent.
And so you have to, people don't just want to stay in a job for 5 years. You know, they want to know what's next. And that's part of a good, well-structured team is you don't want five software developers that are all 10 years experience, and then there's a manager above them and they're all fighting for one job. You want to have like two seniors, two mids, maybe a junior guy that's learning from everybody. So that if somebody leaves, you have this natural progression to move up and then say, hey, David, find me a new junior developer or whatever. But if you have five that are all the same, somebody's going to leave when Johnny gets promoted to the manager. It's like, well, I'm not getting that job for another 5 years. Where am I going to go? What am I going to do?
Is it difficult to know that you hired Bobby for me, and then you know how much he makes, and then someone else in a year comes along and wants to hire the same position, and they're offering $15,000 more, $20,000 more. Is it hard for you to not recommend him for that job?
No. Rule number one in the staffing industry is you do not recruit from your clients, ever. If you get – that's so bad. And if anybody's doing it, it's shame on you. But that is rule number one. You do not cross that line.
Because you know that I would find out that
you are more important to me than that placement.
Gotcha.
Right? You're more important.
That's good.
Any client should be more important than a placement.
This is a big buzzword in all industries today.
Yep.
Culture fit. Oh, they're not a cultural fit. Oh, the culture here. Okay?
Yep.
Is that just a polite way of hiring people that are like you?
That's a tough question, that because I know some companies that place a big emphasis on culture fit, and it's kind of needed, because I've seen situations where people went in there and just washed out very quickly, and then there's ones that are the culture fit. They do match everything that the company looks for historically, and they stay for a very long time. And then there's other cases where you might need to. You know, venture out and you know, take a chance on somebody, bring some fresh ideas in. I remember that story, not to be too long here, but when NASA hired that guy with the mohawk, you know, they showed all the pictures of him sitting in there in that NASA room, and he's the only, everybody else is in white button-up shirts. He's got a mohawk going and all these crazy clothes on. They took a chance. That is not a culture fit for NASA, but they took a chance on him. I don't know how it turned out, but I remember seeing that guy sitting in that room with everybody.
Sometimes it's good to be different.
Yeah, exactly. Sometimes,
but you also got to, like, you know, understand, hey, this person's not going to fit with us.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes it's worth taking a chance, especially if you need fresh ideas. If some sort of situation's happening in the department where thoughts are stagnant, everything's just kind of, you know, and you want to take a chance and get some fresh ideas, then that's a perfect time to go against the culture fit.